Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
What's up, guys? Working Class on DeerCast, back this week with another episode. Middle of the holidays. Merry Christmas. Hope everybody's safe and sound and spend some time with your family. You know, if you're drinking, do it responsibly, right, Perry?
Yeah, always.
Perry Batten's here from Drury Outdoors. What's up, man? How you been?
Good, man. Good. Kind of coming off a season right now. We still got a few tags to fill. I'm going to clean some does up. Mark will have a late muzzleloader, and so will Wade. So
cool.
We'll still knock a few down, but been really good.
Well, last time we recorded was early in the Working Class on DeerCast series out at Mark's. And if people watch that episode or listen to that episode, they're familiar with who you are. But if they are just catching up with this series and missed that one, just kind of tell people who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I started 3 years ago, Christmas 3 years ago, started for Mark. I'm a farm manager for him. I manage everything from Iowa and then clear into our Missouri farms, food plots, cameras, blinds, tree stands. And then in the hunting seasons, whether it's turkey or deer, Wade and I then film the hunts. So we're both cameraman and farm managers, just kind of depending on the time of year, but that's
on Mondays. Head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh,
look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way
on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
That's kind of the gist of it in a quick sense.
Yeah, you guys do like a little bit of everything. I've been around while you guys are doing stuff. Like, no, I haven't been around a lot over there, and you guys are always running around busy, grabbing a tractor and off to go do something that way, and the other guy's going that way, and it's an operation, man. You guys stay busy.
Yeah, this morning I moved two blinds and then erected a new one over some corn to prep for late muzzleloader season, some different spots we haven't hit yet, so...
Very cool.
That's kind of the daily thing currently is, you know, move a blind, move a camera, replace batteries. That's kind of the flow during season.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. You guys are on the move. I mean, and dude, you've had a killer season this year. Like, you get to do some hunting too between all of that. And
yeah, we definitely get to hunt a lot. It's pretty cool season for me. Definitely my best season my entire life. I killed four bucks, two in Missouri, two in Iowa. Both of the deer in Iowa were 6.5. One could have been 7.5. And then in Missouri, I killed a 5.5 and a 6.5. So
dude, it's just perfect.
Just mature, just hammers, man. It was a lot of fun.
At that point, I really don't think, as long as a deer is like mature like that, because that's as mature as it gets. I mean, you hear about older deer, right? But that's like exactly the deer you want to shoot, and whatever is on its head after that is just a bonus. Like, if you can kill 100%. A fully mature deer, you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, the bow deer I killed in Iowa was for sure 6, could have been 7, and he might have been 130 inches, but if you go on Deer Season 22 and watch the video, I'm shaking like it's a 200, so it doesn't matter to me as long as they're old.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost cooler when you get an older buck. I mean, it's cooler when they're bigger. It's always cooler. But like, when you get a buck that's just gnarly, and is, even if his rack's not that impressive, it's like, this buck survived how many years of Missouri rifle season and bow season, or an Iowa, you know, gun season or bow season. So it's pretty incredible what, I mean, even in Illinois, you kill a mature buck like that in Illinois, a 2-buck state, for residents, and then a non-resident, just like Missouri, can kill a buck every year if they buy it, their non-resident,
right?
Either, you know, either sex tag, I guess. It's pretty incredible that they even can make it to 6.5 or older.
100%. Just the things they go through from being born and coyotes and predation to, you know, getting kind of past that stage where they're mature enough to live on their own. And then the diseases, you know, EHD or a horrible winter or an injury, you know, I mean, they just go through so much that to get them to that age is hard, really. It's difficult.
The stars have to align. And do you like, cause you guys are in the biggest, you guys are the biggest in whitetails, right? Like the spotlight of people saying positive and a lot of negative is always on you guys because, oh, you're in Illinois, you're in Iowa, you're in Missouri. And a lot of the other people that kind of give like a negative review or might say, well, oh, there's mature deer on every tree in Iowa. Typically have never been to Iowa or hunted in Iowa. If they have, it's been minimal. I mean, how often are you guys, because you guys hunt, you guys put work in more than anybody else. And that's a key note to this. You guys put the most work in to make this happen. But how often are you seeing like a mature buck out in daylight? Like if you can kind of put like a frame on it or like a frame of understanding for someone who might not realize like the amount it works to get a big buck to show in daylight versus being sloppy about it.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of hours that Wade and I spend in the off season, you know, whether it's, and not even in the off season, you know, coming up here in a few weeks, we're going to start managing does, getting our herd numbers down. I mean, that's an endless amount of hours that we might go out, him and I go to different spots in the same evening and shoot from 5 to 10 does each. Mm-hmm. So we got to deal with those, you know, and we're not together, you know, we're doing this on our own. And Mark is, you know, we've gone out in three different people, Mark shooting them as well. So, I mean, from there, we roll right into spring, kind of get an inventory of what's left. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, are a huge amount of hours of prep work to plan a plot, design it, TSI, the blind in the right place or the tree stand in the right place. I mean, it is a pile of hours to get the farm set up. And then also, you know, you revert back to DeerCast and look at the weather and go, okay, what days are these bucks going to get up? And I mean, we run, you know, X amount of cell cameras. It's a large number. And we, you know, from a kind of like a survey standpoint, we can look at and say, okay, the deer didn't move this day, you know. Yeah, you might have had some does and some little bucks on the plot, but the mature deer, they didn't move.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, the days that we see them moving on the cameras are normally the days we're hunting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's, you know, if it's saying green on DeerCast, you better be out there. But
sure. And then I understand my question's pretty broad, but
yeah,
I wanted to try and get at like – even though, yes, we are in the prime of whitetail country, we are, you know, in the Midwest, it's not like there's not a 150 around every single tree like a lot of people like to believe.
No, not at all.
It still takes a lot of work.
Yeah, especially in Missouri. I mean, our top end deer are 150, and I think that has a lot to do with the long rifle season, a lot of stress, a lot of people with guns in their hand for a long period of time, and they're getting killed. I mean, you kill a 150 in Missouri in our neck of the woods, you're killing a top end deer
for sure.
Especially if he's 5, 6, 7 years old, that's, you don't get any better than that.
Adds a whole nother like factor to it all too, you know?
Correct.
When you guys talked about like the heavy doe management that you're doing, are you guys in an area where there's extra tags being given out because of the super dense deer population?
Yes, in Iowa, yes, one of the counties has a late rifle season, but we shoot them during late muzzleloader season, but they're just county allotted tags, and I think that the counties that we're in, they pad them pretty heavy because they know that there's a large number population wise of deer. And it's not just on our farms. It's across the entire landscape. And I think it has a lot to do with the large habitat. I mean, you've been up here, you've seen the tracks of timber, the large CRP pieces and crops everywhere. So, I mean, they just thrive.
And I know a lot of good buddies are in your guys's area and within a couple hours of your guys's area in Iowa. And all I see is like they'll be, you know, Snapchatting as they're driving around scouting for deer or whatever in their trucks. And it's like the deer density, because you're an Illinois boy. The deer density over there, I would say, is triple in the area that I live.
Yeah, I would say from where I grew up in Southern Illinois, it's probably double.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, I'd see fields of 15 to 20 deer. Then you come here and you see 40 and 50 deer in a field. So it's doubled for sure.
Dude, I haven't seen over 20 deer in a field and I don't know how long.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And it's, you know, there's big enough habitat and big enough, you know, landscapes to sustain that population, if you will.
Well, that too, but like I noticed you guys, I think because of the deer density, this is my theory, I have no scientific proof to back it up rather than just hearing people talk. You guys get a lot of like, you know, EHD or whatever the disease that'll wipe out a lot bigger chunks of the herd every several years. And we don't, I've had properties in the past where we've experienced that, but not in like a major impactful way as of lately. And I think it's just because our deer density is lower. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably a big reason why you have to manage.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I mean, a little bit of that is Mother Nature taking control of Mother Nature, mm-hmm. To the aspect that there's too many deer in some places. But we try our best to not allow that to happen. And we shoot a pile of them, mm-hmm. to get that number down so that if it does hit lesser affected. I mean, there's some farms this year where we did grow crops and, you know, whether that was from watering from the drought we had, but we did grow some food plots in some certain areas, mm-hmm. or some certain farms did get a late rain and they did make. And in those areas, we have all the does right now, the deer, because there's no food anywhere else because it was so dry and everything's dead. So it's there's some farms right now that are quite packed with does.
It's funny, like, you know, I have a bunch of Western friends and out there they don't shoot mule deer does.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. I don't think you can in a lot of states. I don't think it's legal. But they came out here this fall and hunted whitetails. My buddy Trey came up for the first time. He's like, why do you guys shoot does? Like, you know, it's not something he ever has had to deal with. So I was like, I guess that's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah,
you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah,
but I'm like, dude, they're everywhere. Like, I was like, if you know, he bought, you know, when they come in, they get an either sex tag and an antlerless tag. I'm like, if you want to shoot one, you can. Like, but I don't know if it interests them. But it was just funny seeing him, like, you shoot does? What's up with that?
Yeah. Like, I'll send you a picture and you can send it to him one late season. I'm out in the field and there'll be 40, 50 of them. This is why we have to shoot them.
Then there's a lot of does out there, but I don't know. I don't understand enough about like the science of it. It's like, not, maybe there's just not as many mule deer does, and maybe something to do with the migration in that certain area that they hunt in Wyoming. And there's a lot I don't know, but it's interesting to like compare contrast between mule deer and whitetails on like management aspects of it, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, dude, you had a killer season. You said you killed 4 bucks. What this year, if you had to pinpoint your biggest challenge, what would it be?
The biggest challenge this year was the drought, 100%. I mean, it ran us thin through the whole month of August because we planted our grain fields did okay. Corn, we planted pretty early and it ended up being good because we had some early rains. Our bean fields did all right. And then when we got to green field season, we got hammered with drought. It was, I mean, we were in a point where there was 45, 50 days of no rain.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, yeah. So Wade and I started out, you know, we're like, oh, yeah, plant time to rain, got all the fields in, and then it didn't rain, or it rained a tenth or two, and they germinated but you know, not enough there. And then it didn't rain for 30 or 40 days. So then we're replanting, and then never rained. And then we did a third replant where we did, you know, winter grass, wheat, rye, the whole, you know, grain type mixture, because that's the only thing we get to grow that late.
Oh my gosh.
Some of them did okay. Some of them didn't.
So do you just have to, like, when that happens that badly, I mean, you just hoping for the best, hoping for rain, replant when you can to try and time out rain. And then, but if it doesn't come, I mean, are you just kind of like, cause I saw a forest that had like access to a water truck in a certain spot. And the whole time, like during that drought, I'm like, dude, I mean, the money that costs.
Yes.
Water.
So we have up here in Iowa, we have a trailer, 18-foot trailer with a 1600 gallon water tank bolted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hook the trailer to the tractor and then draw water out of ponds. And for us, you know, we have, it's 30 plus green fields. So you never can water them all.
No.
You know, we kind of sit through the summer and look at pictures and go, okay, this is a target buck on this farm. We need to water this green field.
Mm-hmm.
And we had four or five of those spots. And I put down, I don't know the exact number, but it was over 130 or 40,000 gallons of water.
Oh my gosh. What a headache.
I believe it was five fields, maybe four fields. But that much water on those fields, and each tank is about an hour. And to do, I have to think of my numbers here.
To fill it, how long does it take to fill it? An hour?
To do a tank, like to fill, run to the field, empty, that's a full hour.
That's better than I thought it would be, but still.
Yeah, we have ponds on a lot of farms, so we're typically not too far away from a water source we can draw out of.
Oh my gosh, man.
But I believe, I have to add up my numbers, but I believe it is eight tanks to put a half inch of rain on an eight or on a half acre.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think about that like that, it's like, man, you couldn't water everything. And even if you had a big truck and all that and a big, you know.
Yeah,
it's better than nothing, right? But
yeah, because an acre or 1 inch of rain on an acre is how many gallons? I added it up during the season.
Man, the extra work to make sure you guys can have success is like mind blowing.
1 inch of rain.
Perry's doing math.
Not good, people. Yeah, it's 2,700 gallons of water. Hold on. I don't think that's right.
We'll go with it. It sounds awesome. Oh, that's great. Man, I wonder, you know what you guys should do next year? Calculate hours worked for big deer, like specific, like habitat management work, all that stuff, all the hours worked, and then divide it by mature deer killed that was a result of you guys doing work, and then average out hours of work per mature buck.
Per each deer.
Yeah, because I think that would put a lot in perspective, because the deer that I work for to kill, there's a ton of hours in on them. Like, and I think people who put hard work in to kill deer get it.
Yeah.
And we don't really need to explain that to anybody, but it is nice for people who don't know or people that are learning. Hard work in the right places most times will equal good results. And it's like, you know, I wonder if everyone thought about it, log your hours starting in the spring from your spring plots, all your work, or even late season work, your shed hunting, all that, then divide that by how many deer you killed during the following season, and then put in how many hours equal one deer or buck. It'd be interesting to see, wouldn't it?
It would be insane. Yes. I don't even know how I would log the hours, like keep track of them all. You know what I mean? It's,
yeah, for you, it'd be pay stubs.
I'm salaried.
You're losing.
Yeah. But yeah, it would be.
Wouldn't it be cool to see that though? I could
put a number on. It would be awesome to see. To keep track of the hours from, you know, through that whole time period would be insane.
Well, I think it'd put a ton in perspective for people, you know, that just don't know or are working to kill their first mature buck or first buck or whatever, you know. It takes a little more than just showing up when it's in season.
I think just looking at the hours from when we start planting grain fields in the spring to when we are done with grain fields, just that amount of hours, call them the prep hours for deer season, that alone would be astronomical number.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the whole point that I'm like, I build up when I ask, especially like you and Mark and a lot of the jury crew, it's like, it's yes, you guys have the more time to put into it versus, I guess, what an average guy who has a normal 9-to-5. I mean, this is your 9-to-5, right? So it's a rare deal. So you guys do have the opportunity to apply more hours to it. But the thing is, you guys aren't showing up to this thing that's already been manicured by somebody else. And I say manicured as in you guys have put a lot of work into it. It wasn't just like, oh, everything's perfect. Okay. And then we just bought some mature deer and put them out there and now they'll stay. Like, it's a process and it doesn't happen overnight. And you guys can't get lazy. As soon as you guys, Drury Outdoors, anybody from Drury gets lazy and decides it's not worth the work and we're just going to laxy daisy roll out and kill big mature deer for the camera, that's when it falls off, because you have to maintain a certain level of effort and hard work to remain successful in mature deer. That's 100%, you know?
And I think a lot of people only see the 30-minute YouTube video or TV show where we kill two or three deer in that show.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a video that's interesting of just Wade and I or Mark or whoever working, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's hard to make that interesting to people. Some people it is. And we've done a few deer season 22 videos about, you know, setting up a farm or designing a plot or, you know, whatever it is, but that's every day. That's not just one instance, you know.
You get a couple episodes that show that.
That's on every farm we have. You know, we sit down, me, Mark, and Wade sit down for our farms up here at the end of the season and go, okay, this plot, it needs a change. This blind, it needs moved. This tree stand, it's in the wrong spot. You know, we sit down and farm by farm, literally break it down to, it's okay, this one's either good or this is messed up and it's got to get fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we break those down in each spot, and then all of a sudden we go, okay, this farm's good, but this piece of the farm we're not using, we need to design something here. What are we going to do here? We're just going to hang a stand. We're going to go in there and clear out a plot. So we do that per farm breakdown. I mean, we have farms that 48 acres. Our biggest farm right now is 417, and we have acres, everything in between that, from 48 to 417. Actually, we have a 40 in Missouri, sorry. So 40 to 417.
Mm-hmm.
So every farm, every piece of acre we have, we try to utilize it our best way possible.
I think a lot of people can take something out of what you just said there, because I'm hunting, I don't have anything as big as 400 acres, but I'm hunting like from 40, a 40 acre piece where I killed my other buck on to, you know, not quite 400, but I have different pieces that I can hunt. And I try to do the same thing a little bit, but I think where people miss out, even whatever permission piece they have, just break it down to like tree stands. Like you said, do we need to put a stand in there? Do we need to move? Do we need to make a change on the stand? Like, even if it's moving at 50 yards where you saw the majority of the deer coming from bed to feed, because you don't feel like going to do it in the summer and you're just going to do it and then maybe I'll get lucky. You have to put effort into making those little changes, because that's what fine tunes like the perfect tree or the 100%. Perfect spot for a good wind. And I think people get like, I don't want to box out the time to do it. They got the family tugging on them. Their job's tugging on. I get it. but that's what it takes to be consistently successful on deer.
Yep. And it's not always, I think a lot of people also like, oh, maybe I need to put a stand here or put a plot here. And, you know, say they're hunting a small piece acres. Maybe you don't need to put anything there. Maybe you just need to stay out of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of people think they need to be everywhere on their farm. And, you know, we have farms where we have maybe one or two blinds or one or two stands and one or two plots, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly on an 80 acre farm, we only have one large plot and two blinds on it for different setups.
Yeah.
And that's the only place we hunt, because maybe everything else we is bedding or cover that we don't step foot in.
That's a really good point, man. Like, intrusion is huge.
Huge.
Intrusion, entry and exit. We've been preaching that on the podcast a lot more in the last couple of years as of lately. But yeah, like my 40 acre piece that I have to hunt, I never walked in the center of that farm all year. And I think that's why I killed the deer.
How many stands you have on that 40, and are they on the edge?
They're on the edge, and there's two.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you're slave to the wind and slave to your access.
Yeah, if it's not good, you just don't go.
Don't go.
There was times where – go ahead, go ahead.
I always tell people that I'd rather hunt like 10 or 12 perfect setup days out of the year than hunt every day I can.
Yeah.
Because your success on those 10 or 12 days that you pick out and everything's perfect wind-wise, access-wise, your setup's perfect, your success is going to be way better.
It took me a long time to understand that. Well, I heard people say it, but I wanted to hunt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was like I had to scratch the itch. But I feel like as I'm matured as a hunter, I still have the itch. I still want to be reckless.
Yeah.
I'm still hunting, you know?
Yep.
But I have spots where I can maybe do that, and then I'll save certain spots that are going to be more affected by pressure. I have low pressure sits, is what I call them. Easy to get to, low intrusion. I can hop in and hop out, and I know I'm not going to mess anything up.
Right.
But I think there's a lot to what you just said. It's like, man, I know hunting more feels productive. It does feel productive, but it's almost counterproductive if you're not checking those boxes.
It can be. Yeah. And even in up here, we're blessed to have a lot of spots for a pile of different winds. And we set almost every single one of them up with a really good access. That's why we can almost hunt every day. But there is some days where we're like, you know, we don't have a whole lot going on right now for a spot and the correct wind. So we might, you know, say it's a big plot and up front by where the deer come out and feed and have a lot of scrapes, we have a bow blind, but behind, you know, for a lot safer wind, we have a gun spot. We might just climb into that gun spot on a safe wind, access is good, and just watch what happens. You know, our chances of killing may be zero, but we're watching, we get to hunt, we scratch the itch.
Yep.
And it's a scouting mission, if you will. So
for sure,
you know, it's just one of those things to think about. Like, I, you know, tell 100 different people that if it's not perfect, don't go.
Yeah, it's hard. I think social media pressures people into making more mistakes at times. Hey, I want to move on from this. I love this conversation. We could talk all day about this. I get jacked up about that stuff.
Oh yeah.
I want to know real quick what it was like to hang out with Morgan Wallen and just go hunting with them.
Morgan and his cousin Jared came in for Missouri raffle season. Super good guys, super nice people, just down to earth, man. Just like you and I.
Yeah.
You know, they're no different than anyone else. They just get to live a different lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Jared's a songwriter in Nashville who's Morgan's cousin. And obviously everyone knows who Morgan is. But, yeah, they came in Missouri raffle season, and Jared killed opening day with me, and then Mark and Taylor took Morgan opening day and evening, but he killed in the evening. So,
yeah,
it was a blast, great time, great people, and we killed some big deer.
Yeah, that was a great episode, too. They did seem just like down-to-earth dudes, which is refreshing to see always. You know?
Yeah, they were, man. Like – they enjoyed being in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, and having bad phone service and just hunting, camp, food, you know, it was good.
Good. That's awesome, man. Yeah, the episode was awesome. Check that out on Deercast or the Deer Outdoors YouTube.
For sure.
If you haven't watched that yet. Hey, I haven't got an update. I haven't talked to our hunk of a man friend over there, Wade Robinson. I'm due to chat with him, see how he's doing.
Yeah, you should call him. Yesterday, I called him to ask him about a work question. We were supposed to do some things, and he didn't answer the phone. And so he called me back later. He goes, sorry, I was in the tanning bed and didn't get your call. So if you see him looking a little bronze lately, he's been doing some tanning.
Oh, nice. I love this feud that has just stirred up just on our podcast between you and Wade.
Oh, yeah. Wade and I spend so many hours together, we have no choice but to get along and be brotherly like. So
dude, that's any coworker like that. It's like,
oh yeah.
Well, if people didn't see the last podcast we did with Wade, Mark had us fabricate fake listener questions that were to Wade that were just all about Perry.
Yeah.
So Wade's like, I can tell he's sitting there like, kind of questions are these? Are we?
He was blown away. His face was just like,
yeah, because he's really like on the spot, you know. So he didn't want to be like rude, and he's like, yeah, like smiling through his like, what the heck are we talking about? And then at the end, I'm like, hey, dude, those were all fake. Mark wanted us to be worse on him, and I'm like, man, I can't do it. And then I don't want to get punched on air. You know what I mean? So pretty funny. Well, shout out to Wade, man. We got to get back over there and hang out with you guys.
For sure.
We actually, you know what? We need to get you guys here. We've been talking about doing that for over a year.
For sure. Yeah. When the season closes here, we'll figure out a time, something to talk about. We'll come over and chat it up.
Yeah. We'll have some cold drinks and hang out in the studio. And
for sure.
We'll do that. We'll get a bunch of listener questions prepared. Maybe you and Wade can go back and forth. It'll be kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I got one more brain buster for you. What was your biggest takeaway from this season over any other season that you've ever had?
Biggest takeaway.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough question, man.
I know your biggest challenge was the drought.
Yeah.
But you got to hunt 4 mature bucks, you got to hunt with some big names. It can be anything from your own hunting experience to hanging out with new people, anything like that.
Yeah, I think this season was persistence, really, because I hunted a lot in front of the camera. I hunted a lot behind the camera, but that's every year. But this year, Wade killed a really big deer early, and so he was kind of checkmarked in Iowa. I filmed Mark kill at 183 pretty early. So he was kind of, you know, on the back burner of which deer he's going to go, you know, after next. Mm-hmm. And so it was me. I had the hot golden ticket in Iowa. And so I got to hunt a lot. And coming off last year, I made some bad shots. I think those were part of the questions that Wade answered.
Yeah. I think there's
I had some rough shooting on more than one deer.
Yeah.
And so I started shooting my bow June 1st, and I shot 2 or 3 times a week. Not a lot of arrows, but just, I mean, I'd shoot and shoot and shoot, just persistence. Mm-hmm. And so when I was in front of the camera, you know, that's something you always worry about. And, you know, I'm always nervous. You don't ever want to make a bad shot on a deer. And then, you know, when you're in front of a camera and there's going to be, you know, a couple 1,000 people get to see you make a horrible shot, it's even worse.
Not to rub it in, but a couple thousand.
Yeah.
More than a couple thousand people. And that's the pressure of it, you know? Sorry, I just threw salt in your wounds, didn't I, on that one?
Yeah, and it's fine.
Pressure of that is insane.
Being honest, I felt terrible. It was horrible. It all looked bad on film. I hate it. I don't ever want to do it. So being persistent in shooting my bow this year and went into Missouri, made a little left shot, but, you know, stuck home, killed the deer, came to Iowa, 32 yards, stuck him home too. I mean, I hit both of them within an inch or two of each other in the same general area. And they both ran no more than 40 yards and died. So, and getting to hunt a lot in front of the camera. And I had some really close encounters as well before I killed the deer that I did in Iowa. So being persistent to make sure that the situation was correct, you know, I had in deer season 22, if everyone goes and watch that episode, I had a really close encounter. The deer is drinking out of a homemade water hole, if you will, that we made on the edge of a plot. I was like, this deer is dead to rights. No way he's going to get us, because our wind was bad, but we were closed up in the blind. I come to full draw. We get the window open and a doe is up in the timber and blows before I can let the arrow go. And so, I mean, it was just waiting for the being persistent, waiting for that perfect opportunity.
Right.
And ended up getting them and made the shots with the Matthews and then notched the tags and had a blast doing it. I mean, had a blast. But I think that's the biggest takeaway is, you know, everyone out there has had, if you bow hunt long enough, everyone has had a bad season. And for me, that was last year, shooting wise. It was on me. The deer did nothing wrong. I shot bad. And so going forward, it's like, okay, if you want to be successful, you got to be persistent and get into a routine, if you will, in shooting your bow. And that's what I did. And it worked.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. It's all good things. Shoot your bow more, get better. But also too, man, shit does happen. So don't beat yourself up too bad. It's a bummer, but you know, you took that and applied it to what you, where you needed to apply it.
Yeah.
And I think you came in like mentally strong and confident. And I think that is a big, big factor in shot execution. When you drop, you know, that deer is going to die, you know,
100%. And then, you know, it's whether you're, you know, a bow hunter or a gun hunter, you know, if you don't go to the range with a bow or a gun and feel confident, do something different to get the confidence.
Yeah. I like thinking back when you're younger, I think, you know, you've probably been hunting for about as long as I have. It's like when you were younger and you drew back on a deer, you somehow had like that, like doubt of like, I hope I hit it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And like now as an adult and the hours we put in, I can't imagine having that feeling. I think I would let down.
Yeah, it's not a feeling then of, I hope I hit it. It's, I have to hit it, you know?
Yeah.
And in my mind, it's, I have to hit it. And it's not for the, yes, it looks bad on camera, but for me, it's the, you know, making an ethical shot on a deer. I absolutely hate wounding a deer. I don't care if it's a 180 inch deer or a doe, it doesn't matter. I hate it. It makes me feel horrible. So,
oh, it's the worst feeling.
Yeah. And last year going through that on multiple occasions, I was just like, I gotta be persistent, shoot my bow, get better, and execute the shots that I need to execute.
So for sure.
I'm blessed in the aspect that I shoot a lot of guns. So I'm typically pretty good behind a trigger and a scope of a rifle or a muzzleloader. So
yeah, well, it's something I want to touch on moving on, because we haven't talked a ton about like shooting coyotes on the podcast, and maybe it's something like I want to do more dedicated shows to it. But I noticed you guys have been shooting with, and I don't even know the proper term because I'm so removed from the gun scene, like a suppressor, a silencer. You guys have been shooting.
Yeah, suppressors from Silencer Central. I mean, they've been great.
Good dudes over there. We've hunted with them guys in Wyoming on a bear.
Oh my gosh, it's such a tool to add to an already deadly arsenal. Take the 6.8 Western from Winchester that we shoot all the time in Missouri for rifle season, which is just a flat killer. But it's a Magnum cartridge, so it does have a decent amount of recoil. But the percussion that it puts out when it goes off is quite drastic from a filming standpoint, trying to hold a camera still, and just from a safety standpoint of ears.
Yeah, especially in a blind.
Yeah. So we put a Banish 30 on that and got it sighted in, and it takes everything away. It is literally like shooting a 22 mag.
Really?
I mean, it is it is very enjoyable to shoot now, and it's also a very deadly combination. We killed, Mark and I went out one evening or off season, killed 10 does in evening. So they run a little bit when it goes off, but they're not quite sure, you know, what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, going forward into the, you know, once deer season's over, I've kind of dipped into the thermal coyote hunting game and started to get into it pretty heavy. Some of my friends from down home do it pretty heavy and kind of bouncing ideas off of them. And last year I killed, I think, 12 with a thermal, and it's just, you just level the playing field at night because they're mainly a nocturnal animal.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I mean, to see them, you know, in a thermal scope coming across the field to the call and committing, if you will, you know, you fooled them.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's an accomplishment too.
More people need to kill coyotes like that. It's something I always want to get. Like, we do one good coyote hunting weekend here as a crew, and we should do more, but I don't, you know, I want to shoot one with a shotgun. Like, I want one in my lap and shoot with like a turkey load or something like that, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
But no, I think it would be fun to like build a rifle for it and get the thermals and do all that to manage coyotes, because like Chandler has the worst coyote problem I've ever seen. A deer gets away from him and he's got to let it overnight. It's done, gone.
We've got a few farms that are like that. And a weird thing this year in particular, our coyote numbers on the cameras are way more than they've ever been.
I wonder why.
And I don't know why. Our fawn numbers are definitely, because we run in Missouri, we run a survey across all our farms. Like every time someone sits in Missouri, I get data from them, fawn seen, doe seen, buck seen, each blind, each farm, you know, through the entire year. So, you know, our fawn numbers are definitely down. And I talked to Mark about this. In my mind, the drought had all the green vegetation that normally gets, call it 3 foot tall, only foot or 2 foot tall. Mm-hmm. So when the fawns are dropping, they didn't have a whole lot of cover, in my opinion, you know, from the drought. And so I think that could be a factor. They didn't quite have the cover to hide in that they normally do. But yeah, just overall, our coyote numbers are up. And to know exactly why, I don't, but I'm coming for them. I can tell you that.
Right. It's like, you know, it's like, can you shoot enough to make an impact? It's like, you think one does it, but you know, there's controversy on that. They say that you really have to trap out a bunch of them to make a real difference.
For sure. And like anything I've said, the landscape appears so big and supports so much wildlife. I mean, even if I went into, say, an 80 acre or a 120, which we have a lot of those acre numbers, say I killed two or three off that 80, you know, somewhere around there's a pack of them that's going to move in, or somebody's going to take up that residency. So
here's the thing, either way, it's a damn good time.
It's fun. It is a great time.
I mean, every time, I can speak for all bow hunters, you're bow hunting, you see a coyote, you're trying to shoot it with a bow.
Oh yeah. It's a coyote hunt quickly.
Yeah. I shoot one probably every year nowadays. I should get one coyote with my bow a year, and I don't play around with them.
Yep.
Like, to not get too graphic, I had one come in and sat down like a dog, and I just put it right on. Dude, it's just devastating. I'm like,
yep.
That's a good feeling, because they're so wiry, you know?
Oh, yeah. It'll humble you as a bow hunter, too. If you can shoot them with a bow, you're doing good, because every little sound, creak, movement, they're gone.
Wiry.
They're and moving. And
they're
the
almost
wind
as bad
too.
As turkeys. Have you ever tried to shoot a fall turkey from a tree stand?
I have shot a couple, yeah.
And they're hard. They're hard to get drawn back on. They're looking
They can see you for sure.
So it's about that level of like difficulty from a tree stand to draw back on a
coyote. Yeah.
We're just so in tune. And that's why when I shoot them, I shoot them to have them. I make sure with the bow, they're not going anywhere. That's my goal with them. So,
yeah.
Well, dude, thanks for hopping on and BSing with me.
Anytime, man.
We got to get you guys down here. Best of luck to you killing the coyotes, the doe management, whatever else you guys are doing, you guys are all over the place. So
yeah, like I said, we got Wade and Mark and a few other late muzzleloader tags here to finish it out, and then we'll move on to the does and then move on to the predators. So we're cool, kind of winding down. But like you said, it's been a great season. Everyone's been successful. Getting to film Mark kill a 183 and a 185, and then Wade filmed him kill 191 in Missouri. So
I'm a big fan of that buck he shot, man. That's a nice, I mean, all are nice bucks, but Wade's buck is like my favorite looking, I think.
The 191. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That reminds me of the big buck that we call the Geyer buck that my dad shot. It's got like a similar look. Kind
of. That deer is the epitome of a Missouri monarch because he's 7.5 or he was 7.5 or 8.5. I don't remember exactly. We've had him. They had him before I even started working here.
That's crazy.
And then so I start working here, and the saga, if you will, continued with him of just he was a nocturnal animal. He really mm-hmm. was on our farm, at least.
Yeah.
And then I honestly, we got that phone call that night. I was filming Taylor just down the road in Missouri, and Wade was filming Mark. We got that call that he had killed him, and we called him 6x5. He killed the 6x5, and I was like, I don't even know if this is real right now. You know?
It's a myth to you at that point. It's like,
right. It was a legend is what he was.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to talking with him. I got a lot. That's a good thing. It's like you guys kill deer. It just makes my job easier, really, because there's just easy conversation flowing in. So
easy to talk about.
I got a lot of catching up to do with the entire Drury crew. So I'm looking forward to the year of podcasting.
Heck yeah, man.
Well, cool, dude. Where can people find you?
Find me?
Yeah.
Instagram, Facebook. I'm out there.
Okay. Just look for Perry. You'll see
Perry Batten, Perry Batten Drury Outdoors on Instagram, and then just Perry Batten on Facebook. You'll know it's me, my big goofy looking butt. So you can't miss me, man.
Well, dude, I appreciate it. It's been fun. I'm happy for your season. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing you in just a few weeks, a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have a good time. Congrats on your season too, man. Thank you. Put some down.
Had a good season.
I'm really jealous of you getting to go kill that big cat, though.
Oh, I can line that up if you want to go.
I do.
We'll talk. Let's talk.
100%. I'll talk to you in a few weeks, and we'll figure that out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can line that up really easily for you. So
we'll
figure something out. All right, man. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate everyone tuning in, listening, watching. If you are not watching this series, get in DeerCast. You can watch a full video in there. You can see Perry's beautiful face the entire episode. So get in there, leave a comment, like, support our community on DeerCast. We have to come together and support these hunting social platforms as best as we can. And DeerCast is the leader of them. Get in there. We appreciate it all. Lee, like I said this, instead of saying go shoot a giant, I said stay calculated, go shoot a giant. So I'm going to start saying that from now on, so you know. So stay calculated, go shoot a giant. We love you guys. Peace.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.